From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
First, the Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl. And now Eagle McMahon wins the Las Vegas Challenge. Looks like 2018 is shaping up to be a good year to be named after a Big Bird. Welcome to this week's edition of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, joined again by my co-host, Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how was your weekend?
Probably not as fun as your weekend.
I mean, I was in Vegas running around working at the Las Vegas Challenge. What did you get up to?
Well, it was a little bit warmer here in Nashville, but one of my dogs decided to sample some of my dark chocolate late one night, and long story short, I had to take him to the emergency vet.
Oh, no.
I will spare you the gory details, but he's totally fine now.
Okay, good.
Apparently, he has a new taste for chocolate, so watch out for that.
Here's the thing about dogs. Like, they're blessed with this amazing sense of smell, and they can go and sniff these things out that end up being poisonous to them. It's really kind of unfair.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Especially when, $600 later, luckily we've got the pet insurance, but still. He's cool, though. He's all good.
All right, good. I'm glad he's doing okay. I'm sure that was not fun to deal with.
Thank you for your concern.
No, of course. I was out in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Challenge. Marty Gregoire and I were running around running the PDGA social media channels, writing articles, doing all that fun stuff. We went on Facebook Live for a bit, and we were treated to some fantastic disc golf in the Open Women's Division. We had a nice little showdown between, as always, Katrina Allen and Paige Pierce. Paige Pierce ended up coming away with late. And honestly, to me, the bigger story was Eagle McMahon, like I said at the top of the show, winning his first career national tour event. And he did it in really dominant fashion, pulled away late. During the final round, it was never really a question, but there was always a little bit of a question because in the past he's kind of had that tendency to, you know, have mental struggles down the stretch. And so to see him kind of overcome that was huge. He ended up finishing with a 36 under par total for the weekend over a fellow Colorado native, a kid named Joel Freeman, who we will talk more about later. He was great. Sarah, when you were watching from home, Did you feel like Eagle was going to take it home after those three rounds?
I wanted it for him, and I felt like he had it pretty well secure, but I have not played those courses just looking to see how much OB is out there and how much the wind comes into play. You really have no idea until you tap in that last putt. So, I mean, I think when there was about three holes left, I was like, yeah, he's got this. Feel pretty confident. But again, there's a lot of cart paths, there's sand traps. It didn't look like it was too windy that last day. So not a lot of that to battle with. But yeah, I was super happy to see him win. Super young guy. How old did you say he was? He's 19.
He's 19. I think he'll be 20 in April.
Okay. Yeah.
He's actually the second youngest first-time national tour winner, if that makes sense. Ricky Wysocki was 19 years old and 2 months when he won the 2012 Brent Hammock Memorial Open.
And how many months does Eagle have?
Eagle, I think, is around 10 months. I think he turns 20 in April or so.
So close.
Yeah. So, hey.
Yeah.
Still nothing to shake your head at. You know, he's been on lead cards at numerous events. Talked to him about it yesterday. And I'm going to play my interview with Eagle from yesterday later on in the show. Hopefully people won't mind a little change in sound quality, but, talking to him right after the event when the emotions are still kind of rolling in is pretty cool. And I want people to be able to hear that. You mentioned it not being that windy the last couple rounds. Holy cow. Round one, especially round two to a lesser degree. I personally have never been in such furious winds. Like most of the players were saying that they had never played in anything that sustained, like high gusts, yes, but sustained winds. It was awful. Like, you go watch the coverage of this thing, and people were throwing hyzers that should spike in the ground and were getting blown away. There was a putt that Simon Lizotte missed that almost blew back to him, like that old GBO wind putt video. It was incredible, and it totally fouled up the conventional leaderboard the first day.
Yep. Well, it just looked like glass. I mean, you'd throw the spike hyzer that should, you know, you'd hope that it would dig into the ground, but I think the combination of the super short and dead grass from the off season of being a golf course, teamed with just high gusts of wind, and some of those rolls were nasty, just, you know, rolling backwards like 40, 50 feet. So it's really discouraging when you have a great shot that you think might land right under the basket. So to overcome that was a definite feat.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. I ran into Nate Sexton yesterday during the women's final. He was out there watching. And, you know, he's known as more of a conservative player. Like, he doesn't like to label himself that, but he definitely doesn't take the big shots, the big risks that a lot of the guys do. But he said that in the wind, like, he couldn't even feel confident in his normal safe shots, mm-hmm. because they would just pick up and roll and blow away, and he didn't want to get frustrated by that, like, you know, dealing with the adversity to his normal safe shot game. So he actually just ended up playing more aggressively because he figured, why not?
Yeah, you can see that on especially the island hole, the triple island hole.
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
Yep, and, you know, he was last to tee and kind of made a joke to Jeremy Colling that everyone else laid up and I had to impress the crowd and go for the big shot. And he ended up, unfortunately, going OB twice, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that hole in theory can be really fun, but in those conditions, it was
nerve-wracking.
Nerve-wracking, and then it didn't end up being terribly compelling because everyone just laid up. Like, that hole, the hole is designed so that people hopefully won't lay up. I think they shortened it this year with that in mind, but, you know, there's only so much you can do. I mean, the conditions were abysmal. And really what the end result of that was is, you know, the wind didn't really pick up until about, I don't know, 11:30. And so you had people teeing off in the morning who had beautiful weather. I mean, it was cold still, but, like, the women's rounds weren't really affected. The earlier men's rounds weren't affected. And so we had, you know, after day one, the regular leaderboard wasn't, you know, quite as tidy as it usually is. We had a couple of young guys, Joel Freeman, Jeff Renner, Jesse Adams, kid from Utah who I had a chance to talk to. He was really nice. He's actually in the Air Force. He was on leave, I think, for a little bit. But, you know, yeah, some younger guys that we don't get to see very much of, which on the one hand maybe isn't as appealing to, like, the hardcore fans of your Paul McBeths and your Simon Lazzats. But for people who genuinely just appreciate disc golf and seeing people work hard and different people's styles, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it was in one of your articles that Joel Freeman was talking about how he's gotten onto some lead cards or chase cards of some bigger tournaments and kind of talked himself out of it mentally because he was saying to himself, you know, I don't deserve to be here. You know, no one knows me as well as some of these other players. And that going into this event, he was like, you know, I need to flip that. And I did play as well as these people. I do deserve to be here. And I think that's just a really great thing for an up and coming player who's got a lot of ambition and strong play, just to make sure that you're not talking yourself out of it mentally before you even take your shots or start your round. So I thought that was really insightful coming from him.
Yeah, while we're on the topic of Joel Freeman, then let's talk a little bit more about him for people who don't really know him. And honestly, I didn't know him beforehand. I don't think many people did, unless you're out there on the road all the time. He's based out of Colorado, so it was kind of cool. Him and Eagle, both Colorado guys, on the lead card the last couple rounds. They sat there after round three and kind of reminisced about the first time they played together and times they've battled. And it was just a really cool experience to kind of take that all in. But the thing that I was really impressed with him, like you were saying, Sarah, is the mental game. Like, he talked about how he'd been on that lead card before. I think it was with Eagle and Will Schustrick, and I think he said Matt Orem at Worlds a couple years back, and he psyched himself out and it just totally crumbled his game. And then he played the Utah Open last year and he was on a card with, like, Austin Turner and Bobby Music, and I think he said Eric Oakley, and he was about to kind of get himself in that mode and psych himself out again. He's like, you know what? I work really hard. I've got the game to do this. I know I can do it. And that showed the rest of the week. He really hung tough yesterday. I mean, he got down a little bit early, but over the past few years, as we've seen more media coverage in the sport, you know, we've seen other Joel Freemans on lead cards final round, and we've seen them really, you know, kind of succumb to the pressure. And maybe, you know, especially on that card yesterday, my gosh, you had Eagle McMahon in first place, and then Simon Lizotte and Paul Macbeth both on the same card. So Joel Freeman, definitely kind of the odd man out there, but hung tough, ended up finishing in second place, and just the nicest guy. I mean, out there, you know, cheering everyone on, being really positive, kind of keeping the mood on the card real light. And then talking to him after the round, he just genuinely seems appreciative of being out there. You know, he's going to try and tour more this year. He comes from a family of like seven. He said he's got kind of that outgoing goofball personality from his dad. And just a really, really nice kid. Actually signed a couple autographs. And underneath the signature, you know, he writes Joel Freeman and his PDGA number. And then he wrote Freebird. I'm guessing that's what they call him, or what he calls himself. But really nice performance. I hope we get to see more of him throughout the season, because I think he's one of those guys who he's confident in his skill set. You know, I think he's 10-10 rated or so. But he comes from an ultimate background. Said when he first started playing, he could already throw 350 feet, which that'll make you jealous.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you're seeing out of him is still very early in his career. He's only been playing in the open division for, I think, 3 years now. So, you know, lead card in a national tour event, lead card for three rounds in a national tour event, pretty big feat, and showing that he kind of has the stuff to, you know, make it with the other guys on tour.
Yep. That's interesting that you say that he's from an ultimate background, because I saw him throw a little touch approach shot with his putter, and that's something that I do coming from an ultimate background. I kind of wondered about that. So thank you for confirming for me. That's pretty cool.
That's why we're there. Yeah. Was that the shot? I can't remember if we were live on Facebook at that point. Was that the one that he almost hit with, right? It was a little approach shot that splashed out.
Yep.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And he ran a couple like that. He had a nice little forehand. It was a drive, but a nice little forehand drive to the island on hole six that, I mean, it literally hit the pin. I mean, he's got some serious game, so I'm looking forward to see how his skills evolve in the years to come.
Now, yeah, for sure.
Looking more, we got to talk a little bit more about Eagle. I feel like we said that he won and then kind of glossed over it. But, like, if we're getting into all the narratives and everything of disc golf and just sports in general, like, Eagle has come close so many times over the last couple of years. You know, last year at the Aussie Open, he had the lead, or was it at least tied at the very end, and then just massively shanked a drive because he crumbled. You know, he's had situations like that before. USDGC the year before that had a really, really awful lead card performance. Even last week at the Wintertime Open, you know, he was in the lead and fell apart. I don't want to say fell apart, but he just didn't play well in the final round.
Yeah.
And so, especially with having that so fresh in his mind coming to this event, to be able to put all that behind him, I think, is just huge for him. And the way he did it, I thought was really impressive. Like, did you notice anything as you were watching him that really, like, stood out?
I mean, he was obviously playing pretty safe, I would think.
Exactly.
But like you said, he was, I mean, something that always helps me mentally is just keeping loose, keeping positive. And you said you could just see on the live coverage that you guys were doing on Facebook Live that Joel was keeping him kind of loose, probably taking his mind off of the fact that he was about to win his first NT.
Yeah.
Just kind of cutting up. So I think that could be really helpful as well.
Well, I guess the reason I probably should have been less obtuse, but like the reason I asked if anything really stood out is because honestly, he didn't do much that was flashy the whole weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a couple of really great shots. You know, yesterday parked a couple holes. I think it was during the third round at the Terex course. He blasted one of the 500 footers with the OB golf green in front of it and parked it. But like, other than that, it was just pretty routine for him. There were no big crazy shots. He didn't make a ton of long putts. I think maybe his longest putt all week was 40 feet. So just a very controlled performance from him. And I think if we see more of that, I don't know. I feel like his ceiling is so high with just the skills that he has that we could be looking at a few years of Eagle McMahon winning big events.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah. And this is one of those courses, especially, I mean, all three courses were on golf courses. So mostly wide open, lots of golf carts,
yeah.
You know, bunkers, greens, things like that. So maybe some players were a little bit scared off by playing very aggressively the first round because of the wind, and then just kind of kept their game steady. And I don't know. I mean, you could use the wind as a big learning lesson, especially first round if you're very affected by it, and you kind of take that into consideration mentally and learn from it throughout the weekend. And who knows, maybe that's what he did and was like, all I got to do is just play safe, boring golf, keep it in the fairway, make my approach shots and make my putts, and that's all I got to do. And he did it effectively.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, even in the wind that first day, he shot the best on his card, on that feature card the first day. He was 5 under, which isn't, like, fantastic, but it put him on the lead card the next day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to see him put together that performance, it really seems to be a little bit of an evolution in his game. I know he said he spent a lot of time this offseason working on mental coaching with Andreas Gertsch over in Switzerland when he was over there training. And then he's got his dad there with him who's always helping coach him. And for anyone who doesn't know Eagle's dad, Pat, he is just the coolest dude. I've kind of gotten to know him a little more over the last couple seasons, just wandering around to these big events and chatting with him. And I was honestly just so happy for Pat to see Eagle win yesterday too, because, you know, I'm a dad. I understand how prideful you are about your children, but I also know that it can be heartbreaking when they don't succeed. And so, you know, I'm sure he's shared in those heartbreaks with Eagle over the years, and to see all of his hard work kind of come to fruition is pretty cool. Lots of other stuff before we get into the FPO division. A lot of other really interesting performances coming out of MPO, I felt like. Honestly, the biggest surprise to me, I shouldn't say surprise, because he always kind of has these performances in him, but as far as a consistency standpoint, the whole tournament, Drew Gibson played really, really well. He just switched sponsors this offseason, and clearly that move helped him. The nasty part, though, he was playing with this big old gross gash on his index finger after, from like the second round, I think, on.
Just from throwing dry skin and
from throwing and dry skin. Holy cow. The weather there was nasty. So many players were dealing with it. It was like, we need to have like PDGA pro tip on hand care. Like,
yeah,
that's what we need to get for this next week. We should have done that this week.
High quality lotion and just a terry cloth glove or mitten that you wear overnight. It will save your life.
There you
go. Not that I do it. I know that I should do it, but I don't. So I need to take my own pro tip.
I mean, I'm the same way. Like, my hands were basically bleeding the first 2 days, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel kind of silly wearing a glove to bed.
Well, I mean, do you want bloody hands or it's up to you?
I want pain, just all the pain. No, I know. Yeah. Yeah. So that was wild. He was dealing with that on his finger and it was gross. He showed me, it was nasty. He had like a little rubber glove that he had just cut off the finger part on there the next day. And then, you know, Paul McBeth was dealing with the same thing. Even Eagle during the round yesterday was putting new skin on his hand. And that stuff reeks. But he kept applying that between holes. And then, you know, Katrina Allen had a blister on her finger. So just early season, you know, people maybe not throwing as much.
Yeah.
Combined with the conditions and nasty,
I mean, that's
on
a,
the hands.
That's a big feat just to overcome something like that. I mean, anyone who plays disc golf and has any kind of little mental thing that's off, I know this is stupid, but sometimes if I don't wear matching socks, then that gets into my head and I'm thinking about it during my round. Or, I mean, just your hands and your arms are your tools. They're your golf club. So if it's just pretty awesome that they were able to overcome something like that and continue to have amazing rounds even while they're bleeding and probably in a lot of pain.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty. And I mean, hopefully people can prepare a little better for that next year. I did notice Eagle he dropped something out of his bag, and it was lotion. It was like some fancy Swedish lotion. So Ooh. maybe they've got the really good stuff over there because he wasn't having too many problems. I don't know.
Yeah. So, gotta ask him about that.
I forgot. Those are the, darn it, I forgot that one. Looking at the rest of the top 10, I mean, Dustin Keegan shot really well. He was on the lead card for a day. Really nice to see him back. He was injured a good portion of last season, battled a shoulder injury. Actually learned to throw left-handed this offseason and throws farther than I do, and that's my normal style. So that's a little sad. He got a left-handed hole-in-one as well, which was pretty cool. And then Kevin Jones, who we talked about as one of the, you know, 8-to-watch and 18 players, tied for ninth place. He was out there, and I watched him a little bit at the Adidas Terex course, which is the long bomber course out there. And that kid absolutely smashes. He's just keep an eye on him. He's going to do some silly things, I think, on the golf course this year. Should awesome. We switch over and chat a little more about the FPO side?
Yeah.
We should do that.
I focused a little bit more on the FPOs for obvious reasons, but I was very excited to see Sai Ananda's name come back up. I followed her a little bit a couple years ago. She got first place at AmWorld in junior girls one division or something, and I just heard through the grapevine that she had amazing form and that she's just going to be someone to look to in the future. And then last year she was actually our 2016, she was our AmWorlds champion.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, just continuing to climb the ranks. And then last year, her best finish was 10th at Beaver State Fling. So nothing to scoff at there. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So
yeah, she tied for 8th this week. League card second day. And pretty cool. Like, I had a good time talking to her. She's, you know, she's got an interesting, like, her name, Sai Ananda, like, her name is the Red Ninja Turtle. Like, that's the weapon.
Yep. Blissful weapon. Yeah.
It was cool.
I wish I had a name like that.
I know, yeah. Right? Maybe we can come up with cool nicknames for ourselves that are based on weaponry.
I would like that.
I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to think about that. We'll bring that one up next week. All right. Yeah. What else? I mean, the thing I really noticed about her, everything looks fairly, I don't want to say effortless, but her form does, like you said, her form looks pretty smooth, especially putting. I thought she looked really comfortable on the putting green. So hopefully we'll see a little bit more out of her this season. I know she's hitting the Memorial. I don't know exactly what else she's going to be doing the rest of the season.
She's not signed up for the Memorial, but she is playing the Glassblown Open.
That makes sense. I think she's a Latitude. There, yeah. I think she's sponsored by Latitude. But
gotcha.
Oh, was she not at the Memorial?
I checked the list and I didn't see your name on there.
That was my bad. Okay. No, I think she's kind of, the impression I got from her is that she's going to try and do a couple more big events this year, see if she can hang. And then if she gets it together financially, which is the biggest part, do a little more touring next year. So definitely keep an eye out for her. What else did you bring from the women's division this week?
So Kona, she's been on, you know, been on the list for a little while now, but this is her first top 10 performance.
She looked great.
Yeah, she has amazing form as well, and it seems like she just dialed it in for this event and everything is working for her. Super happy to see her. She recently moved out to LA area with her family.
Right.
So she's playing all the events out there. But yeah, it's just great to see all these young players just get into the top 10, get on some of these feature cards that are filmed either by Jomez or Smashbox or PDGA Live, and be able to see some new faces out there, and especially growing the sport among women and also younger people. So.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And with Kona, I believe she might have won the drive competition in the women's division. It was her and Jen Allen. And I want to say,
wow,
Kona won. I'm not 100%. So if Jen Allen's listening and she won, I apologize. But I thought I heard that Kona won. But it might have been close. But
even amazing.
I mean, she was out there throwing 360s.
Wow.
Yeah. So pretty cool. And then I guess we should probably talk about how the end of it all went down. You know, it was Paige and Katrina in another one of their going tied in the final round things. And it was kind of back and forth a lot of the round. Paige would get a couple birdies and then a couple OBs. Paige really had a lot of OBs this week. That was kind of the biggest thing with her game. But
yeah,
ultimately, she buckled down at the end and parked this 460-foot hole like it was nobody's business.
How is that even possible? I mean, what did they say? That only there were only two other birdies in the whole event, and they were both MPO.
I think it was eight. I think at least.
Oh, eight. Sorry.
Through,
my bad.
Well, through round two. I should go back and look. I didn't look at the second round of that course yesterday, but I can look right now because we have technology. That was hole 15, I think.
Yep.
And there were not many birdies on that.
I mean, that was. I saw that on the live coverage and I was just blown away. Not the live coverage. I think someone just posted a video of it.
Yeah, we posted the Jomez guys gave us some clips this week and we were able to post that one.
Yeah.
And yeah, just oh, I'm sorry, it was hole 15, right? Yeah, hole 15.
Yeah, 15.
It was it was an incredible shot, and the really interesting part was, you know, the other day when they played there for round two, she threw a fairway driver on that shot instead of the distance driver that she threw this time. And so it was a change in strategy. It was a little windier the second round. And then also in the fourth round, she needed to kind of make a big move. And yep. For her to be able to do that with such precision, I mean, it was literally like 8 feet from the basket.
Yeah.
The kind of putt that I would make. And, it was amazing. I'm looking at the hole scores here. 11 birdies on the men's side in round four and 8 in round two. So fewer than 20 birdies on the men's side, and she was the only one in the women's side.
Yeah. I mean, are you surprised? I'm not. I mean, nothing surprises me about Paige's distance.
Well, honestly,
at this point,
like,
but it's just, yeah. Well, I have no words.
I wanted to bring that up because everyone knows how much distance she has, but it was really clear this weekend, and I don't know if it was because it was early season and maybe not everyone was up to form. I know, you know, Katrina said that she lost distance. She took like 3 months off and didn't even throw, and so she had lost, she felt about 50 feet of distance. And so there were times where where Paige was, we're talking 75 feet further up the fairway off the tee.
Wow.
It's just a huge advantage for her. And it was, I think maybe that's always noticeable, but with everything being so wide open, I think it was just even more noticeable.
Yeah. But I think also something to note is people always think that you're not, that you don't need accuracy or a lot of accuracy if you're playing on a wide open golf course. But I mean, say that Paige threw 460 feet on that hole and was, you know, 30 degrees off or something, it would have left her with maybe a 50 or 60 foot putt.
Yep.
So you're not only throwing distance on these courses, especially for upshots, accuracy is extremely important. And that's where, you know, people were climbing up the leaderboard because they were maybe not necessarily throwing 460 feet, but they were throwing maybe 300 to 350. And then you still have, you know, 150, 200 foot upshot that you have to be accurate, confident, and put in that circle of, you know, putting confidence that you have. So
yeah, I mean, Sarah Hokum was like the key example of that this weekend. She was out at those courses, and she admits it, they don't play to her strengths because she doesn't throw as far as everyone else, but she just went out there and played kind of risk-free and went station to station. And I mean, the thing with her, yeah, you talked about the upshots, she barely ever left herself with longer than like a 15 to 20 footer. Her approach accuracy with her sidearm is pretty deadly. So it was nice to kind of see her climb up to second place. She tied for second. So you have Paige, who absolutely bombs, and then you have Sarah, who will admit that she doesn't absolutely bomb. And they were only one place apart on leaderboard. It was kind of cool to see the two different styles be able to still be successful at the tournament.
Yep. Yeah, at a course like this, especially if there's wind with all the out of bounds, it's just sometimes all about playing boring golf, not going for it. Just take your three, walk away instead of risking a four or more. So
that was exactly the word Sarah Hokum used yesterday. She said boring golf. You just have to play boring golf sometimes. So
sometimes now, it's hard to swallow your ego and do something like that. But I mean, worked for Sarah, and it works for most people when they're put into high risk situations like that. So yeah, props to her. It was a great performance this weekend.
Kind of in the same discussion on quote unquote boring golf, there were a lot of talk, especially at this Adidas Terex course, about the distance being tweener holes. It's hard for me to really judge tweener holes and distances. I don't throw very far. But I know a lot of people were really kind of lamenting the fact that on the Adidas course, they were almost playing more of a layup game. I don't know. What's your take on that, especially in the FPO field? Like, is that something that can kind of, is that just sticking with boring golf?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's more of a disadvantage for the big arms like Jennifer Allen, Paige, and Kat. You know, they might be able to consistently take twos if holes are between 300 and 400 feet, we'll say.
Sure.
But when you stretch the hole out to 400 to 500 feet, a lot of those twos are not going to happen anymore. So I think something that Jennifer Allen said in one of her little interviews was she would throw one of her bomb drives, and a thrower who can throw a little bit, you know, not as long as her, will also throw their drive, and they're both just doing an upshot. And Jennifer Allen's upshot is shorter than that other person's, and they both take threes. So the score separation, I think, is a big disadvantage for those big arms. And did you hear the same kind of stuff on the men's side too? I didn't follow that as much, but
a little bit, not quite as much. I mean, there were some of them where you could see that, like, I mean, Eagle and Simon and like Kevin Jones and, you know, guys like that, they were still able to get to the green for two on a lot of them. I definitely heard that more from the women's side, but I think there was some talk about it on the men's side. Again, it's something to remember with this event. This is only the third year they've done it at this facility, so they're always kind of tweaking and improving it. And one thing I do want to say, after being out at that event, the Las Vegas Disc Golf Club and Jeff Jaqua, the tournament director, they crushed it. Everything ran really smoothly. The teams were all really professional. The staff at Wild Horse Golf Club could not have been more friendly and welcoming of disc golfers. So, you know, maybe they can keep making some tweaks to the course and kind of dial things into where people are happier. But the venue there itself and the club, you know, the local organizing committee there, has it absolutely locked down for this event.
Awesome. I'm hoping to make it out one of these years. We'll see.
Put it on your calendar for next year. We do a little podcast from there.
There you go.
We'll go do a podcast in at the craps table or something.
Perfect.
I'm sure that would be safe.
Give me a chance to lose all of my money.
Well, you could lose it on you could lose it at the casino, or you could try and gamble on the golf course. Which one?
Or I could lose it on the golf course. Yes.
You know, I mean, it might happen. Hey, you'd actually be playing, so I give you props for that. I could not ever hang on those courses ever. It's just not going to happen.
Give yourself a little credit.
I give myself credit on the scorecard with lots of extra strokes is what I would do. So, anyway, anything else that we want to touch on before we hear from Eagle over the weekend and move into the Memorial? Was there anything else that we needed to talk about? There were questions about like live coverage and things like that. Weren't some people chitter-chattering about that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I think there was an expectation that this was going to be an event that had live coverage, and unfortunately there was not. Live coverage is very expensive.
There was some really good live coverage that this guy was doing on Facebook Live yesterday.
Yeah, the commentary was it was
interesting. I mean, look, I understand that. And there was live here last year too, so I could understand where the expectation came from. There are a lot of considerations with the media stuff, I think, that we can kind of explain from the PDGA point of view, which is the nice part. Number one consideration with live coverage is cell signal. You know, there's going to be plenty of events this year like Beaver State and Masters Cup where the cell signal is so bad, live coverage is totally out of the question. But then there are other considerations, too. There are financial considerations. There are considerations with who the local organizing committee has teamed with for sponsorship and how much they're contributing for media, and as a result, what they want to do with media. Yeah. So there are a lot of, you know, balls to juggle to make everything go off. You know, and this is no knock on the live coverage that we have. I think it's great that for the Disc Golf Pro Tour, we get live coverage. It still gives people a chance to watch it when they don't get to see the national tour events that are being covered, you know, in post-production. But there are also, like, the financial considerations are that, you know, you think about, you look at how many views the Jomez stuff gets after a round, and then compare that to what comes in with the live coverage. It's just kind of, it's a couple different audiences.
Yeah.
There's the really hardcore fans who want to tune in at their computer and take in as much as they can right then, which I totally appreciate. And I think eventually we will get there with disc golf, but we're still in these kind of nascent stages of growing. And if we can go and get 71,000 views on the post-produced coverage like Jomez has for the first round of MPO, that's pretty impressive for
the bang for your buck. Wow, they're up to
71,000 on YouTube.
Wow.
Already. 50, that's for the front nine, 52,000 for the back nine.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously people are hungry for it. It's early in the season. Everyone was super pumped. That was a big reason why we actually went on Facebook Live yesterday, was that people wanted to see it. And so hopefully they enjoyed it. But I also know it's not, we know that Facebook Live isn't the best, but it hopefully satisfies people who really want to see it now. And hopefully people can kind of understand that there are a lot of different things to take into consideration.
Yeah.
When it comes down to live versus post.
Yeah. And the good thing is that we've got UDisc as well. I mean, that app has just gotten, I mean, has improved so much over the past couple of years. And it was really fun for me, at least, to watch the shot-by-shot coverage, like, oh, Paige is about to take, you know, a three from circle one, or making her three putt, or whatever it is. And, I mean, that's really cool. You could just get lost in that app for days and just go down a rabbit hole. Just all of the cool stats. I'm kind of a nerdy numbers person. So being able to look at some of the stats, comparing, especially as I was doing my picks for next week for the Memorial, just kind of looking at the percentages of fairway hits and circle one putting and all of that was really cool. So they're making it a lot easier to, at least if we don't have live coverage, they're making it a lot easier to follow along with what's going on live.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best decisions that was made for the national tour this year, was to bring UDisc on. Matt Kruger from UDisc was there with us this weekend. He crushed it. You know, he was recruiting volunteers every day to do live scoring, you know, troubleshooting, doing everything that needed to be done to get the live scoring up. And like you were saying, from home, you could be like, hey, Paige is about to tap in for a putt on this hole. When I'm out at this event, I'm running around to a bunch of different spots, whether it's like I just finished writing and got to the course a little bit behind and I'm trying to find where people are, or you're looking at scores and you're like, oh, you know, Simon's putting together a hot round right now, I'm going to go run up three holes and catch him. So
yeah,
having that as a resource so you can track everything in real time from home or at the course is just really cool. So very appreciative of everything UDisc did for us and is going to do it for us at all the NTs this season.
Yep. And something else kind of cool that I thought, the PDGA contributed different types of phone chargers so that if someone wanted to volunteer to keep score, they're not worried about their battery dying throughout the round. So they've wireless chargers with different cords and stuff. So I thought that was just a nice little touch. Very thoughtful.
Yeah. And it was just to kind of, you know, not also being thoughtful, but also just trying. It was part of the recruitment process. You know, if someone maybe is a little hesitant to try it, they might be able to say, oh, well, you know, my phone battery might die or something. So one less roadblock to getting it done. But and also, not just thanks to UDisc, but thank you to all the volunteers who followed along. It's a pretty cool experience, especially if you're a fan of some of these players, to come out, follow their card, score it, see exactly how they're doing. close up. I know the players appreciate it. I know at the PDGA we appreciate it tremendously. So thank you to all the volunteers who did scoring and all the volunteers who just made the event run as well as it did. So let's take a break. We're going to listen to my little chat with Eagle McMahon from yesterday. I keep saying yesterday. You're probably listening to this on Tuesday, but that's okay. We're recording on Monday. It's all good. So we'll talk to Eagle McMahon, and then we'll come back, and we're going to preview the Memorial Championship, hear from Steve Dodge real quick, make our picks, and get moving on some other stuff. So give us just a minute. We'll be back on PDGA Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Is it like, can you put it into words?
Yeah, I can put it into words. I can say that I played 4 rounds at the Las Vegas Challenge National Tour event, and I won the tournament. It's a great feeling. I felt like I was the most equipped for these courses. I have, my sidearm has been on point, my backhand's been crushing. I've just been the most accurate, most consistent I've really ever played this tournament.
Yeah. What did Kat tell you last night? What was the pep talk?
Well, it was basically, we were just talking, like, what kind of tricks your mind plays on you, like, what social media does, like, seeing all those negative comments, because a lot of people out there are expecting me to choke, because I've had past records of it.
Right.
And, like, last week,
You were close
that
last
was,
week.
That was a really close tournament, and the fact that I was so close that, and then came to this tournament, and then shredded.
Yeah.
That's just like the most incredible feeling.
I was going to say, you probably trade that last week for this week.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So just overcoming that kind of mental block in your head and then doing this, it just feels like I feel so accomplished. I feel so accomplished. And I don't know, it shows I've spent all off season in Switzerland training just for a moment like this. So it's an absolute incredible feeling.
Did you expect it to come this early in the season?
No,
honestly.
No, honestly. I'm just really excited. My dad was talking today. It's like, tomorrow, he said this last night, tomorrow is the start of the future. You're going to erase all those past ideas of yourself, and you can begin your career to be the best player you can be.
Nice.
And it's just, the future starts now, man.
I love it. I talked to your dad a little bit, because obviously I know you guys are incredibly close, but I mean, what has his support meant to you over the years? Can you express that?
I would not even have been in this position without him. No one in my life has ever supported me as much as he does and still does. And he's literally my best friend, and I couldn't ask for anything more. To have him touring with me, it just makes it that much easier.
That's awesome, man. What about, I know Joel hung tough on the lead card. What did you see from Joel this week?
Okay, I don't mean this in a bad way.
No, do it.
I don't mean this in a bad way whatsoever, because Joel is incredible.
Yeah.
I did not expect to win my first national tour battling with Joel Freeman.
Dude. No, that's not a bad thing to say. I understand.
I mean, he may have came up short a little bit, and he may not have achieved what he wanted to, but the fact that he got on the top card and maintained all 3 rounds on top card, it's absolutely incredible. And Joel Freeman is a face known by everybody now, which is kind of crazy. And I'm really happy for him, because he dedicates his life to disc golf. And I don't know, it's just a really cool thing to see someone up and coming to get on this big stage.
Simon say anything to you yet?
He gave me a hug. He gave me a hug, and I gave him a little hard time. He's like, okay, now you got to win next week. So
it's not like that? It's not like you want to beat him next week? It's like you just trade off for a week?
Of course I want to beat him next week, but
right.
It'll take the sting off a little bit if he does beat me.
That's true. I was going to say, like, do you, like, going into next week, I know it's a quick turnaround, do you have realistic expectations to go in and win next week, or do you honestly expect to have, not like you're going to be literally hungover drinking, but, like, do you expect to have, like, the, you know, the emotional hangover?
I'm going to go out there, I'm going to practice my rounds, I'm going to try to treat it exactly like this one. You can't take off on a tournament. You got to give every tournament you're playing your 100%, even if it's like a C tier.
Yeah.
You got to keep the routine the same, because that's the only way you're going to get ultimate success, if you stick to a routine.
I know you worked out physically this off season. What'd you do mentally though? Because I could tell looking at you this week, it was different.
I have to, my dad's my number one support, but there's somebody else that really has helped me overcome a lot of things, and it's my coach in Switzerland, Andreas Gerch.
Okay.
Every week he trained us and physically, but also he helped us through our mental problems. Every Wednesday we talked about how we want to get better, what our weaknesses were, and he just kind of helped us talk through those things and created like a formulated plan on how you can get better in those certain aspects. And I have to say that he has helped me so much through certain things that I feel like a new person, an absolute new person. Like, usually I don't know if I'm known to have this, but a temper out in the course, my temper can be kind of there. Like, I have a contract with myself. I'm not going to get upset because it's not worth it. If I win this tournament or if I come in last place, I still have the support of many people, and it doesn't really matter the outcome.
Nice. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you. Definitely. I mean, there's been so many times, like USDGC, Aussie Open,
yeah.
Beaver State Flynn,
yeah.
And there's so many, and they're all forgotten about now. It's really good. I'm so happy about it.
It's awesome, dude.
I'm so happy.
Enjoy. What are you going to do to celebrate?
I don't know. Go to bed.
You're such a party animal. Thanks, Eagle. All right, so coming up this week, we have the Memorial Championship, first event on the Disc Golf Pro Tour for this season. It used to be first event of the National Tour. In the last couple years, it's gone to the Pro Tour. But another one of these in this early season swing actually starts Wednesday this week. So 2 days in between Vegas, if you made the cut, to head over to Arizona and play four rounds there. It's going to be Wednesday through Saturday. Two rounds at Fountain Hills, two rounds at Vista del Camino, and actually they switched it this year. Instead of finishing at Fountain like they normally do, they're going to finish at Vista, and I don't know. It's, the Memorial's so well-known, I don't know that we need to go into huge detail on this, but, you know, for the sake of, you know, informing people, it's going to be broadcast live on Smashbox, and there's also going to be post-production coverage from Jomez and Central Coast Disc Golf. And, you know, I think it'll be a fun event to watch. It's nice for the snowbirds to come down and get a couple weeks down in the desert. What do you think, though, Sarah? It's eight rounds in 10 days to start the season, eight competitive rounds, and that's not counting practice rounds or whatever. Do you feel like that's a lot? There's some players who maybe think that's a little too much. What's your take on that to start the season?
Yeah, I don't know. I can see it both ways. To me, if you are a touring pro, you've kind of chosen and committed to disc golf as your job.
Yeah.
I work 40 hours a week in my job and do some freelancing and then also play disc golf. So I really don't have any days off. It would be, So it would be really nice to have a couple days off. But I don't know. I also see it from their perspective. If they didn't get a lot of practice in on the courses, I'm not sure if most players are flying or driving. I'm terrible at geography. I don't even know how long it would take to drive.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I think this is probably the back-to-back events that you could most get away with this
yeah.
week, because Vegas to Phoenix is like maybe 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm underestimating
yeah.
that, but it's not much. It's not a huge drive. And the other thing about this is that the Memorial's been running for so long. Most everyone on tour is played it extensively
yeah.
like we're talking numerous times, and so it's one of those events where you don't necessarily need to be super well practiced or prepared if you've played it a few years in the past, right?
Yeah, and maybe it's just starting off the season a little too hot. A lot of these players, Katrina especially, she mentioned to you that she took 3 months off from playing altogether
yeah.
and I mean we saw how well that worked for her, but I mean, some of these players are probably just wanting to start slow, start their season off, wanting a little bit more time off before they get into the heavy disc golfing of the season. But yeah, I don't really see it as a scheduling issue. And as we begin to see disc golf continue to grow, there are so many events popping up. I mean, this is an issue that's happening all over the place with even B and C tiers. You're getting a lot of events
sure.
that are happening on the same weekends and the same area, same state, so I don't hate it. I don't see a problem with it. But I'm not playing it, so.
Right, right. But I mean, in keeping that in mind, like with different events being near each other and competing weekends and stuff like that, PDGA Director of Operations Mike Downs, he was the events manager before, and now that's his new title. I talked to him about this. He's an Arizona guy, so obviously he knows all the guys at Memorial. He knows all the NT directors, everything like that. And the two directors between Vegas and Arizona do communicate. And kind of the thinking actually was, if you go Thursday through Sunday and then Wednesday through Saturday, a lot of people actually come out west and make it a two-week swing. And so if you finish the swing on Saturday, people can fly out back home on Sunday. So it's not like there was no thought process going into it. They actually were trying to make it so that people can travel. It might be a lot of golf in a few days, but then you get a couple weeks off.
So, I will say, though, to date, I haven't played a Disc Golf Pro Tour event because they do start on Wednesdays or Thursdays. And as someone who works full time, it's hard for me to take that much PTO off unless it's for a really big event like Worlds or an NT. So that may deter some of the weekend warrior type players like myself, because you'd have to take Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off of work. But I think we talked about this before, that a lot of these big events are mostly schedule-wise designed for the touring pros. So just trying to keep that in mind.
Well, looking at the pro, I actually have the pro tour schedule pulled up because I was looking at the Memorial information. This is actually the only one that starts on a Wednesday this year. Most are actually Friday through Sunday.
Ooh.
This season. So,
well, that's a lot more attractive.
They've made some changes. So maybe you can play, let's see, what's Friday through Sunday? You would have your pick of the Jonesboro Open. Ooh, you can come out here for the San Francisco Open. That course looks stunning. You could do the Utah Open, the Great Lakes Open, the Idle Wild Open, or Ledgestone.
Ledgestone.
Go practice for Worlds next year.
Yeah, Jonesboro, Ledgestone, and Idle Wild are all within driving distance. So definite possibilities.
Oh, I'm sorry. Idle Wild was Thursday through Sunday.
Oh.
Womp womp. All right. Sorry to get your
hopes up.
But anyway, yeah, it's always interesting to kind of look at the schedules, see how they line up. I think it's great that we have people working together and trying to actually make more of these events so that people can tour if they want to. I think that's kind of cool. All right, we're going to take another quick break. Steve Dodge is going to join us to talk about the Memorial this weekend and what the PDGA and the Disc Golf Pro Tour are doing to kind of team up to help grow the women's side of the sport a little bit more. So we'll take a break. We'll be back with Steve Dodge, and we'll return in just a minute. Now on the show is Disc Golf Pro Tour Director Steve Dodge. The Pro Tour is kicking off this week, starting Wednesday at the Memorial Championship in Arizona. Steve, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Steve, and congratulations on the new gig.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You've always been supportive and communicative over the last couple years, so I think I owe you a thanks as well. Talking about the Memorial coming up this week, PDGA, Pro Tour have kind of linked up and partnered, if you will, on some initiatives for the season. I wanted to talk to you about that. First, specifically, I know you've been a big proponent of increasing the women's coverage, especially on the pro side. Obviously, that's always an initiative that the PDGA is trying to do, is increase our female, membership. So give me a little more. What's going on between PDGA and Pro Tour this season that you're excited about?
Well, I'll just go ahead and say, first off, a big thank you to Joe Shargaloff, the PDGA Board of Directors, Jeff Spring, who is the Pro Tour PDGA liaison. All of those people put in tremendous hours to make this PDGA Pro Tour partnership happen. It was really fun watching it develop. Obviously, with every negotiation, there's tough times and there's easy times. And we got through, you get through all of them by listening and understanding and trusting. And it's great that we're at that point. And we have, as you said, we have good support and good communication. So this year with the women's grant, what we're doing is we're having, the PDGA, basically the PDGA and the Pro Tour are both footing about half the bill to make the women's coverage that's included in the live broadcast a bit more professional. Last year, I took that on myself and edited that footage and even sometimes commentated.
Right.
Much to the chagrin of people who commented on my commenting. But this year it'll be done much more professionally through Terry Miller and the Disc Golf Guy will be managing that production. And then so I suspect that the women's footage that's put into the live broadcast will be significantly improved. And the other aspect is after the broadcast is complete, Terry will be editing that footage down for a standalone post-produced round coverage that will be released the following week.
So you're going to be running poor Terry into the ground between that and live coverage, right? He's going to be pulling double duty.
That is the absolute goal. And I look forward to buying him even more ice cream after the events to make
I'm
it.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Absolutely. So I would say the media side. And then on the event side, worked with Elaine King and got who I think worked with the women's committee and Valerie Jenkins and all those people. And got a list of five or six big things that we're going to be improving on the women's side as well, like lower entry fees, more bathrooms on the course. We have a women's tent where the women can chill after the round, and a bunch of other things like more photos and more stats and inclusion on the leaderboard and scoreboards. So all in all, just trying to give the women more exposure so that more women will see that women play disc golf and start playing themselves.
Speaking of that, I don't know if you've had a chance to follow the Las Vegas Challenge at all. Quite a few, you know, surprise women's players this weekend. Did you happen to notice anything that jumped off the page to you?
I did notice some new names. Congratulations to Cy for having a fantastic first round and breaking out of the pack. And it was really fun seeing the women's side of it get the basically equal coverage. What did you see, Steve, that came out on the women's side?
Yeah, I mean, Cy would have been one of them. I was really impressed with Kona Panis too. It seems like her game has made some big leaps. And then obviously Madison Walker playing so well after being injured for almost all of last year. So a lot of strong play. And then obviously, you know, at the top, you know, Katrina and Paige battling, and then even Sarah Hokum hanging in on those style of courses that don't necessarily suit her game as strongly. She put in a really impressive performance, I felt like.
Absolutely. And I'll go ahead and say it was like Madison Walker. I would have absolutely expected her to do well once her injury went away, similar to Dustin Keegan, who had an injury that hampered him, I think, the last half of last year.
Yep.
And after he got through that clearly over the winter. And he came out really strong. So look for them to do great things. And we drove about 25 hours from Springfield, Illinois, where Paragon Disc Golf is, down to Scottsdale. And we're at Vista right now setting up. But during the 25-hour drive, it was very easy to just fill it with conversations about the disc golf people and how they're going to do, and just all of the predictions and conversations about the Memorial and then the season as a whole. And it's this is very, very exciting.
Well, I know I've asked you in the past to try and make picks and you sometimes don't, but do you have any bold predictions maybe for the Memorial? It doesn't necessarily have to be a locked in pick, but maybe a surprise performance that you expect to see.
Well, the way we decided we're going to do it this season, we're each going to pick three players. And the first person picks one player, the next person picks two, then the next person picks two, and then the last person gets one. And I'll be happy to do that with you if you'd like, and we can flip a coin to see who goes first.
Oh, man, I don't know if my brain is functioning well enough for that many players this morning.
It's really not that tough, Steve.
All right,
you can
let's hear it. Let's hear it. Go for it. We got one player that we picked to win?
No, you pick one player, and then I pick two, and then you pick two, and then I pick one.
Oh, gosh. Men's or women's?
Let's just do men's because we focused on the women already.
All right, I think Ricky's gonna bounce back this week. I think he needs to get the Memorial monkey off his back.
So I will take Paul, and wow, I think Eagle did great. It's fun to watch him get that get that significant win. I'm going to pick Paul and Simon, though.
Oh, all right. You took Simon from me. So I'm gonna go Nate Sexton. He had a strong performance there last year. I talked to him out there at Vegas this week, and the wind really just wreaked havoc on his game. So if the conditions are more optimal for scoring, I expect to see him bounce back.
And you get one more.
Oh, I get one more. Gosh. I don't know. Who needs another strong performance this week? You know, I really liked what I saw out of Nico this week. I think his game looked strong. His putter looked great. So let's put Nico up in the mix too.
I think Nico is a fantastic pick, and I'm going to pick Eagle just to have fun because he's going to go back to back.
Oh, all right.
So that way we both get three good choices, and that's the way my brother and I would do things when we argue about who's going to win stuff. So that's a fun way to do it.
Very nice. We'll be sure to compare notes next week. Before I let you get back, I know you have a lot of setup and everything to do out there. You know, tell me a little bit more. You mentioned this women's tent and everything like that. What exactly is going to be in there? You know, who's going to have access? How's that all going to be set up for the women's players?
So the women's tent is going to be set up it's going to be interesting because it's going to be in a secluded, yet easy to get to spot. So it's going to be tricky at each venue where we put it. But on here at the Memorial, it's going to be located right off of the tee. I'm sorry, right off the scoring booth at Vista. And it's basically a place where women can go and seclude. 90% of the competitors at these events are men. And it feels like women, if I was a woman, I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. I'd like an opportunity to just be able to chillax amongst my fellow women friends and just be women on our own. And so the things that are going to be in there, you know, the things that people have asked for is lip balm, lotions, some chairs, maybe some lights, some nice soft lights, other kind of products that women would find useful, and then maybe some artwork.
Ooh, very
nice. If anybody wants to donate some artwork, we will carry it around and set it up during the season. We don't have any artwork yet, but maybe we'll get some.
Well, it sounds nice. I look forward to hearing what the feedback is on that. Especially, I'm sure lotion will be needed. The dry weather in Las Vegas was very harsh. So hopefully things are a little better out in Arizona this week. Obviously, Memorial this week going to be broadcast live Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, you're giving us all 4 days. Great.
All 4 days. Every Pro Tour round will be broadcast live all season. And the really fun thing that we did this year was the live broadcast starts the same time for each event. So for the Memorial, it starts at 4 o'clock Eastern every day. And then so for the Waco Open, I think it starts at, might start at 4 o'clock Eastern every day also. And then Jonesboro might be 4 o'clock, but you can go to our website, dgpt.com, and just click on the little schedule icon and see when things start. And, but so if you, you know, once you get the first time and the first day, you can watch, you know, exactly what time to tune in the next few days.
And then if anyone misses it, you know, Jomez, Central Coast, who all is coming out for this week at least?
So we'll have MPO1, MPO2, and FPO1. We'll have post-round edited production through Jomez, Central Coast, and the Disc Golf Guy. And then on day one, we'll actually have an extra card because we'll have Jomez, Central Coast, and Disc Golf Guy. And then additionally, we'll have the live card. So we'll have actually four cards featured on day one, which
wow.
is just a lot. Yeah, more disc golf than you can shake a stick at.
Well, I look forward to watching it. It's going to be great. Sounds like a good way to kick off the season.
Absolutely, and thank you guys for starting it off well. Getting a new person on the board, on the top of the leaderboard, was fun to watch.
Definitely.
Congratulations to Joel Freeman on a great, great outing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays out in Arizona this week, too.
So Lance Brown and Joel Freeman have already started us off really well this season with new names, and it'll be fun to see what new names continue to pop up. I think that's it for me. I'll just say tune in Wednesday, 4 o'clock Eastern.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Steve, for your time. I'm going to let you get back to setting up. Again, that was Steve Dodge with the Disc Golf Pro Tour. The Memorial Championship runs from Wednesday through Saturday. Steve, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you throughout the season, I'm sure. And we'll be back on PDGA Radio in just a moment. Thanks again to Steve Dodge for taking some time out. I know it's a lot to prepare for an event like the Memorial, so good to catch up with him, and very excited to see how everything goes on, you know, the initiatives trying to get more women's coverage. And Sarah, what are your thoughts on this like women's hospitality tent?
I love it because I'm a woman and
there you go. I mean, I don't, well, there's some women, I remember talking to a couple women last year when they first announced they were going to do it, and they were kind of like, they were a little on the fence about it because they felt like it was possibly like wouldn't be executed properly or something.
Yeah,
don't know.
I don't know about that. I think, so I always say that I don't like special treatment because I am a woman.
And I think that was kind of where they were going with that sentiment. Yeah.
And one instance is there are certain people that I've played with that if you're in a shotgun start type event and they don't put the women on holes 1, 9, or 18 or close to tournament central, they get upset. And I don't care because I like fitness. I'm trying to get in as many steps as possible. I don't think because I'm a female that I should be put on a hole that's close to tournament central just to make it more convenient for us. So those types of things I don't agree with. But I mean, if it grows the sport and more women come out because they want to be pampered, that's totally cool with me. So, but I can see both sides of it.
Yeah, I think it'll be nice. We'll get some word on it maybe after this weekend. So we need to make our picks for the Memorial, but before we do that, we need to update the leaderboard from last week. For those who maybe didn't join us or need a little refresher, we made our picks last week and we're doing a season-long competition. Winner, if you pick the correct winner in MPO or FPO, you get 12 points, and then like reverse standings points for other ones, and then we got 3 bonus points for anyone that we picked to be a lock in the top 5. So, Sarah, I'm thinking correctly, you picked
Paige. An MPO?
Oh, an FPO. Well, that's fine. FPO, you picked Paige, and MPO, you picked Ricky,
yeah,
right?
And I was a little bit worried because
I know
Paige
you were.
Started out in 15th, and I was like, come on, girl, you can do this. But yeah, I mean, I knew she'd come back. I was pretty confident.
So you got 12 points for Paige. You got 8 points for Ricky because he tied for third.
Yep.
And then you also picked Simon as your top 5 lock in MPO, so you got a bonus 3 points there. Jessica Weiss was your top 5 lock in FPO, and she finished in 7th. So you came in with a total of 23 points. And that has you out to the lead because
woo!
I only got 16 points.
In your face.
I had in my face. I had Katrina Allen. She came in 2nd, so I got 9 points. I had Paul McBeth. He struggled a bit in the final round. Really just didn't look comfortable a lot this weekend. He came in, I believe, 7th, so I got some points for him. But, my top 5 lock in MPO was Johnny McRae. He got blasted by the wind the first day, and I don't think he made the cut to round 4. But he was out at the drive competition smashing like 560 feet, which
there
is
you go.
Impressive.
Yeah.
And then my top 5 lock in women's was Jennifer Allen, so I did get points for that. So going into the Memorial, Sarah is up 23-16, but I get to pick first this week.
Boo. All right.
Hey, it's only
who you got? Let's hear it.
I'm going to start in MPO, and this is the one event, well, besides USDGC. This is the one big event that Ricky Wysocki has not been able to win for some reason. I don't know if he goes and like puts extra pressure on himself because he spends his winter in Arizona, but he spends his winter in Arizona, which means he's got to finally win this event. And after getting off to a rough start, his putt got a little bit wonky, I think, there before, like in the third round. I think he missed some putts in Vegas, which is just insane because Marty and I were watching him just drain 60 footers like they were nothing
as usual
before
yeah.
the tournament. Oh, it's silly.
Yeah.
It's silly. Like, it's not even funny. He's on a whole other level with putting. So I'm expecting him to get that back on track this week and finally win the Memorial. Who is your MPO winner?
I'm going to go Eagle. I mean, I'm hoping that he...
Ooh, back to back.
He's hot right now, obviously, and I'm hoping that he can use that momentum and bring it home too. And I mean, I know these courses are very different, but especially at Fountain Hills, there's a lot of OB, water, so lots of potential for risk reward. So if he continues to play safe, I think he could bring it home.
Okay, I like it. I wonder if he's going to have the kind of emotional hangover. I know he doesn't partake in any drinking during 19, but I'm wondering if he might have a little bit of the emotional come down that comes with a big win. So we'll see. I would love to honestly see him do back to back. That'd be great. My top five lock for MPO, then you left me the person who basically people call this the Mick-morial because he's won it so many times now and owns the course record at Fountain and the highest, you know, everything at the Memorial. I think he's won it five or six times now. I'm going to take Paul McBeth for my top five lock.
All right. I don't blame you on that, but I am going Doss. So this is, So this is his first event of the year. He's been playing this all the way back to like early 2000s. He's got a ton of experience on this course. I'm hoping that he starts out his season fresh with a good few rounds. So
yeah, that's a great pick. I'm Nate Doss. It doesn't matter, like it seems, if he doesn't play, like he just comes out and is still top five. It just happens.
Yep. Yeah.
He's just so, it just comes naturally to him. All right, let's switch over to the women's division then. I have a really hard time picking against Paige Pierce with the way she kind of buckled it down the stretch. She won here last year. She has all the skills that she needs to win this year. And they also took Fiesta Lakes out of the mix, which means it's two a little more open, a little more long courses. They did shorten up some of the tee pads for the women's division over at Vista del Camino and some of them at Fountain too, which actually might mean a little more scoring separation, mm-hmm. but I'm still going to go with Paige Pierce.
All right. So for my top pick for women, I'm going Kat. I think that if she had just kept her focus all the way through to the end of the last round of the Las Vegas Challenge, I feel like she could have had it locked down. Like I said, she didn't play for three straight months and apparently that is working for her. So I don't know. I think she's gonna dial it in and take this one.
Yeah, well, and she usually spends winters in Arizona too, so she's got a ton of experience there. So I like that pick as well. Ooh, top five lock is tougher for me on this one. For whatever reason, I feel like I don't have a good read on the division otherwise. But I think I'm going to go with Lisa Fakus. She played really well at Vegas in her first event of the season. You know, had a nice long throw in. She was actually battling to get on the lead card a bit through round three at Terex. I think these courses being a little shorter plays a little more to her skill set. And, you know, especially if there are more birdie opportunities with the holes being shortened up for some of the women, I think her putting will come in quite handy.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I was going back and forth between two, but I think I'm going to stick with Weiss. I picked Weiss last week. I'm hoping that she sneaks into the top five this week. Looking at last year's results, she ended up in fifth, solo fifth. So, like I said, I'm very impressed with kind of her not really ambidextrous, but, you know, she can throw backhand and forehand. And I think she's going to play smart and get in the top five.
And for anyone who's maybe listening and is like, why the heck aren't these jokers picking Valerie Jenkins? That's a great question. It appears that Val is a late scratch. She was on the list earlier. She's not now. I'm not sure why. Hopefully everything's okay. We'll update anything we get, you know, next week. But before I saw that she wasn't on the registration list anymore, I was actually considering taking Val to win it. Because again, it's like her and Nate could just come out to events after spending the winter making beer and just be naturally good at disc golf.
Yeah. So isn't that nice?
We'll see.
I wish we could all do that.
If only. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take one more quick break And when we come back, we are going to talk about this week in disc golf history. We'll be back in just a minute on PDGA Radio.
Hi, I'm Eric Oakley, and this is the PDGA Radio Pro Tip. One of the biggest things you can do as a player and as you continue to progress is looking back at your mistakes. Understanding when you hit a first tree or you throw the disc out of bounds, what can you do to improve and what can you do to not let those things happen again? Those are the biggest moments where you can reflect and learn a lot about yourself as a disc golfer. So taking those moments and not being mad, but looking inward to reflect and find the positives and doing what you can to not let those situations happen again. So using those situations will only make you a better player, and you'll learn to eliminate them and clean up your game.
All right, welcome back. We're about to wrap up our show, but first, Steve, what happened this week in disc golf history?
I am so glad you asked that question because actually a pretty eventful week in disc golf history. If we go back to 2013, which, yes, not that long ago, not like before when we went back to, I think we went to 2003 last week. So just, you know, 10 years forward. If we go back to the 2013 Memorial Championship, Paul McBeth set the all-time round ratings record with an 1132 rated round at Fountain Hills. It was a 17 under par. He was like one away from a perfect round, and it was insane. The even more insane part about that is he did not win the event. That put him, you know, Will Shustrick was like up. I don't remember exactly the scenario, but it put him close to Will Shustrick. Shustrick thought he had won, started celebrating, and then hadn't properly filled out his scorecard. And so they went to a playoff. Will came through in the playoff, and that was that. But just a wacky, wacky, wacky situation that year at the Memorial. And always kind of fun to look back on that. I'm sure if you're not Will, Will probably doesn't like looking back on that too much, except he did win. So, I mean, just kind of goes down in the annals of history of kind of an oddity, right?
Yeah. Has anyone, I don't know if you know your stats by heart, but do you know what the second highest rated round was?
Oh, it's also in the 11s, obviously, yeah. But I don't know off the top of my head.
Nope.
Do you? I mean, Paul and Ricky last year fired off a couple over 1100. You know, but it's hard to like really compare some of them because they base them off of the course SSAs and everything like that. So, you know, an 1132 at Fountain is going to be different than somewhere else, obviously.
Yeah.
But either way, 1132, 17 under par is just ridiculous. You know, I'm sure Paul will be trying to hype himself up for that kind of performance this week. He always does well at that event for whatever reason. It just suits him. So we'll see what he can do. I think that's it for our show this week, Sarah. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, if you're enjoying the show, we appreciate that. Go ahead and try and find us on, we should be on iTunes now and any podcasting app that pulls from Google Play. We're working on getting on Stitcher. And you can always just listen straight on the PDGA website, too. We have it embedded there. Obviously, if you have any feedback, feel free to hit us up at radio@pdga.com. Thank you to anyone who emailed with requests for certain podcasts for us to get on, or podcasting apps. I'm in the process of going through those, and we'll get it out to as many people as we can. So, Sarah, I hope you have a great week.
You too. Looking forward to watching some of that live coverage from the Memorial.
Yeah, definitely. It should be good. You can tune in on Smashbox later this week. I believe they're going live at 4 p.m. Eastern every day. And if you miss it, you can watch it on Jomez. And we'll be back here next week to talk about it some more. So for Sarah Lamberson, I'm Steve Hill. That was PDGA Radio. We'll catch you next week. Thanks.